the generational difference between today's interview and last week's. I can't even remember what we had on last time.
It's kind of electronic.
It's definitely electro something. Hey, you were listening to Inside Bassmaster, the podcast produced from the Twin Towers overlooking downtown Birmingham above the offices of Bassmaster. This is your host, Thomas Allen, and joining me today, as always, is the man that keeps his finger on master control at Bassmaster.com, Mr. Jim Sexton. Jim
is
with us. And our in-studio guest is one of my favorites. He's surly. He's young. He's vibrant. Matt Heron, Alabamian. Matt, thanks for being with us today.
Hey, guys. Thank you for having me in.
This is fun. We've been investigating, learning about the lives, the background of anglers. There's some good stories, and I'm excited to hear yours. I've heard parts of it. It's invigorating, just like you. But I want to start this out, and I want you to kind of explain something to me. You are a competitor, a fierce competitor. Every time I've been around you to tournament, you were nose to the grindstone. Your game face is on, but it seems like as soon as you step away from that, you're across the table so you can't reach me and slap me. But when you're off of the competition waters, you're a little bit more cute and cuddly and have the teddy bear thing going on. Why are you so intense when you're on the water? Can't you smile?
It's competition, man. Some people, you know, got different ways of showing things that, you know, I've always been that way. It didn't matter if we was playing marbles or we was playing cards. I mean,
you're there to win.
Yeah, I mean, that's just my DNA, and it's a lot of it. You know, I get the MO of being a gruff and grumbly kind of guy.
Right.
But it's kind of like that just that facial expression. You know, I got that blank stare or whatever it is I got, and everybody thinks, "Ooh, this dude right here is a little grumpy and grouchy," but
you're not.
I'm not. It's just something about my face.
he is on the water and occasionally with a disagreeable topic. But after that, he's a heck of a nice guy, and he's funny as all get out.
Well, he can be when he's not having me put a camera in his boat and he's growly because I'm making him smile at it and hold fish up. But you know what? Look, I don't think I have been to a tournament where most of the anglers at the top level in the Elite Series are not serious. You have to be serious. You got to take it serious. And if that's going to be your initial demeanor, it's kind of intimidating, man. Like when I first met you, I was like, man, I can't believe I got to get in this guy's boat.
I was scared when he walked into the studio this morning. I mean,
come on.
Like...
We're starting this out, busting him up a little bit, but no, we're glad you're here. And I want to hear the story of Matt Heron. It's unique because you didn't start out of college. You didn't start as a kid. You were well into your life, had a career, family, the whole thing, and you made the decision to go pro. And I want to start near the beginning. The Matt Heron story begins with a premonition. You'd fished a lot, but that point where you decided, hey, I want to pay the bills doing this. I want you to talk about that point, the conversation you had with your wife.
Right.
And your family. That's a good part to start here. So I'm going to hand it over to you. And I know Jim has a long list of great questions. So if he breaks in once in a while, just be prepared. But the Matt Heron story, tell me.
Well, the Matt Heron story, I was always the little boy that daddy couldn't sneak out of the house without. For some reason, that was always my thing. I played sports. I played football. I played baseball. I played competitive golf. But fishing was all my thing. It was my thing, man. I mean, I just absolutely loved it. And that's where I spent quality time with my dad. And it's what we always done. My memories of bass fishing, that's what, you know, daddy was eat up with it. Mm-hmm. And he didn't tournament fish. He later in life, we'll get to that story later, but he did. But, you know, our days, you know, Sunday afternoons, we were spent on the Warrior River over here outside of Birmingham. And gosh, at Lay and Neely Henry and all the lakes around here, and that's just where my passion was. Mm-hmm. I think it was either my 12th or 13th birthday, I got a custom-made Bill Dobbs rod. It was a guy here locally. It was old 5-foot something or another with a loose leather pistol grip handle. I'm kind of dating myself now, and an old green 5000D Ambassador, and you think I had been given the world.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And
well, that thing be worth today.
Oh, not much.
No. Sounds like an antique.
If you hand it to a kid nowadays, he held on that thing and says, "My God, how'd you throw it? It's so heavy." So, but you know, Mom and Daddy had to clamp down on me because there was a few ponds around the neighborhood, and the rule was is had to be home by dark, and homework had to be done before I got to go to the lake. And, buddy, I mean, it was like every day.
Mm-hmm.
And I was walking and fishing and just whatever. It never quit, but it wasn't until probably 1981 when Stanley Mitchell won the Classic at the Alabama River. That's the year I graduated high school.
I was born in 1981.
Oh, gosh, you're a baby. But in 1981, it kind of kicked on me that, you know, hey, this is something that I could get into. I'm an 18-year-old youngster, and, you know, we didn't have – the Internet wasn't even a twinkle in somebody's eye.
Mm-hmm.
The Sunday afternoons or Sunday evenings, I think it was 5:30, 6 o'clock, that was my fix. You know, I got to watch Bob Cobb in the Bassmasters. And the knowledge you gained off of that wasn't very much. But, I mean, you got a little bit of an insight to what was going on in competitive bass fishing. And, hey, you know, you could win some money doing this deal. And it just, you know, that deal kind of grew. And then by 83, I'm going to get in trouble with my wife. I think 83 I got married.
Mm-hmm.
2 years out of high school, I married the love of my life, and we had kids, and just things were rocking and rolling. And I didn't start competitive bass fishing until 1988. So you have to do the math.
Mm-hmm.
Puts me around, God, I don't know, 81. I was 18, so I'd been about 25 years old.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I want to say it was 1988. I fished the first year I ever tournament fished, and I finished second in the points in the Bama division in the Redman back then. That was a big deal.
Did you go full time fishing at that point?
No,
was that,
no,
that,
I'm
that
still
was some years later.
Still a weekend warrior, you know.
Yeah.
And I beat around home. I fished Redman's and won. You know, I wound up winning some AOI deals and that, made regionals, did whatever. But then in I didn't really get hot and heavy trying to figure out how to do it because I had a wife. Like I said, I got a wife and kids.
Mm-hmm.
And I fish somewhere every Saturday and Sunday and run from ballparks to whatever. And just, you know, I had an extremely successful local career, won a ton of money. And, but I want to say in 98, I got it hooked up with probably one of the best bass clubs that's ever been come out of Alabama. The Bigby Bassmasters, that's where Jamie Horton come from, Dalton Bobo came from. The list goes on and on and on of guys that's qualified to go to the Nationals and whatever.
And that's North Alabama?
No, that's West Alabama.
West, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's over toward Tuscaloosa. That's mm-hmm. where that club was formed. And, you know, Dalton finished second at the Classic at Logan Martin. And this Jamie Horton's been to I don't know how many.
Yeah.
Nationals and divisionals and fish classics out of it.
Yeah, fish the elites.
Yeah,
three years.
I don't know if Russ Lane may have come out of that club after I did. He's a little younger than I did. Make a long story short, I started seeing that was my path.
Mm-hmm.
And then,
what were you doing to make money at that point?
Well, I worked my father. Yeah. I went to UAB. Was studying. I was actually going to get an engineering degree, and just. That wasn't me, man. I mean, I had too many things going on. You know, I like to hunt, like to fish, like to play golf, had a wife. Priorities is all jacked up.
Mm-hmm.
But I also had a family business that I always thought would be mine one day. And
it's an auto body shop?
An auto body shop.
Yeah.
At that time.
That you did with your dad?
Yeah, but at that mm-hmm. time, it was one of the largest in Birmingham, and we, you know, had a great business, but. Anyway, I wound up there, wound up fishing every Saturday and Sunday, and it was, you know, I can't complain. I had a good life, you know. And but in 99, I joined that club.
Mm-hmm.
And it was for the simple reason to fish to make it to the next level. I only fished Federation 1 year. I actually fished 4 Federation tournaments, I think 4 in my career. In Alabama, the rules were if you won a qualifier, you were automatically on a state team. And I joined that deal that year because they were going to Neely Henry. And at that point mm-hmm. in time, you did not want to come to Neely Henry in the month of April. I was going to mow you down.
And you live pretty – were you close to that then, too?
No, I was about 45 minutes. Okay. I'm 15 minutes from there now.
Okay.
But at that point in time, yeah, I mean
– And that's the second lake on the Coosa River?
Second lake on the Coosa chain. Mm-hmm. Make a long story short, I won that divisional – or I won that regional, whatever it was, the qualifier, made the state team, and I want to say I fished one other federation that year. I finished second at Lake Tuscaloosa. And then we wound up going to the Southern Regional down at Eufaula, won it, I think Southern Divisionals. And then I finished third in the Nationals. Michael Holt won it. But that really gave me the taste that I couldn't live without.
Mm-hmm.
And it
gave you the confidence you could compete.
Yeah, it gave me the confidence to compete, but I was still challenged with a budget.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because that's the biggest thing I'm dumbfounded by now as I see these – the younger generation coming along is where do they get the financial back?
And it's more expensive now than it ever used to be.
Oh, it was insane.
Yeah.
But I'm going to tell you, we wasn't fishing for the kind of money back then.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'll finish up that deal. But, you know, it was everything kind of grew from that. And then I had fished some invitationals before 98, 99. I'm kind of going back. You'd have to go back. I'm sure my bio was there.
Uh-huh.
It's either 94, 95, 93, 94, somewhere right around in there. I was sponsored by Basket Boats.
Uh-huh.
And Rick Pierce, I fished like three invitationals toward the latter half of a year. He got me in some. And then I fished three the leading into the season. And I want to say I got three or four checks in the five or six that I fished. You know, I did okay, but I also come to understand that there was a reason why Denny Brower and Tommy Biffle and Rick Klund were doing as well as they were, that because of their name and their dominance, they didn't wind up in boat-on-boat draws.
Mm-hmm.
And they fished from the front of their boat all day long. And that when I left there, I mean, I'd show up on Monday, never pre-fished, never seen a lot of these lakes, and scrounge just to do what you could do and go home and go back to work a job. And I seen the light real quick. You ain't beating these guys. When they leave here, they're going to the next tournament.
Mm-hmm.
That's their job. So I kind of backed off of it. And then I kind of got re-energized and did whatever. The Pierce family, I owe them the world. I mean, they're still to this day, Ivan Williams and Rick Pierce. And they're extremely great folks, man. And he gave me an opportunity to get a taste of it. And Ivan Williams, I'll never forget, that I want to say it was after one of the classics in Birmingham. I finished, I think it was 2010. He come up, shook my hand after the thing. I finished sixth or seventh, whatever it did. And he's kind of goating me. He says, "You should have been here a long time ago." I said, "Well, I know that." He said, "You just didn't believe in yourself." I said, "No, my checkbook didn't believe me."
It's funny how that works.
Yeah.
But then, you know, I had fished a lot of FLW events. Back then it was Red Man. And probably the biggest turning point in my career came every time the Classic would come to Birmingham, whether it was Bob Hamilton winning or Fritz winning or whatever, I was always there on Sunday to watch the final weigh-in.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one guy that would always be there. He fished local tournaments. And after every Sunday with the weigh-in, somebody went, he said, "Man, how come you ain't fishing with them boys?"
Wow.
I said, "Man, you know, I just can't afford it." Well, finally, George Cochran wins the Classic at Lay Lake. And I come out of that thing, and there, and lo and behold, it's like God put him there.
Same guy?
Same guy. He says, "You know you're as good as they are." I said, "Well, may not ever find out." I said, "Because, man, I got a wife. I got two teenage kids." I said, "I just don't know what ain't going to happen." And he said, "Look, I've been telling you for 5 years." And I said, "Well, no, you ain't told me anything." He said, he said, "You got my number. Call me tomorrow." So I called him Monday. Went and met him, had lunch. And I said, "What are you conjuring up here? What's your angle on this?" He says, "Look, He says, I know you got the ability to compete. He said, you're as good as I've ever seen. He said, I invest in stuff. Right now, the stock market's in the tank. I can't make no money. He says, I'm willing to give you the money in return for 50% of what you win. Mm. I thought,
wow.
I don't know about that, man. I said, let me sleep on it. I thought around about a week or so, and I said, you know, this ain't no way to make this happen. Because to do it right, I got to quit my job.
Yeah.
I'm working with my daddy. Me and my daddy's fishing team tournaments. I mean, me and my daddy was making $50,000 to $60,000 a year around home, you know, a piece. Like, winning, you know,
wow.
there was a couple of years there we won almost $100,000. And number one, you know, I'm gonna quit. I got to walk in there and tell my father that I'm quitting.
Wow. That's tough.
And the hardest, to this day, the hardest thing I've ever done is walk in there and take my shop keys and put them in his hand and tell him I would leave it.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just a situation that wasn't my dream.
You told me once about a conversation you had with your family. Is this about that same time?
Yeah, it was about that same time. But now you're talking about my wife. No, yeah. we'll get to that
okay.
in a minute.
That's a good
yeah,
story.
That, this is coming up right after this.
I want to hear the follow-up on your dad, because I remember a story. It was the hardest thing you ever done. He didn't necessarily believe in that dream.
No, he didn't.
But some years later or the next year, he came up to you.
It took 5 or 6 years.
Okay.
Yeah, but it... anyway, I met this gentleman. We had lunch. Like a week later, I hook up with him, and I tell him, look, it's going to cost X amount of dollars for me to quit my job, make sure I got the money to pay the bills. And he said, look, I ain't just talking about it. He says, I want you to get to the big stuff. So I called Bill Taylor at FLW. This was 2003. And I told him, look, I'll pay all the money up front. I've got to get in these tournaments. I said, I've got to get to the upper levels. Can you do it? He said, well, you done qualified 2 or 3 times. I said, yeah, you know, through the red mans and stuff. He said, you would have been eligible. I said, yeah. I said, he said, let me look at it. Back then, they were fishing 200 boat fields, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, lo and behold, he gets me in. Me and this guy inked the deal. But it's also, I mean, I'm fishing somewhere every weekend. I was fishing, I think I fished opens. I would fish 3 or 4 opens a year. Never really the tour and the Everstarts and everything that I was doing, I never really focused on getting to the elites. But I fished weekend stuff. Make a long story short, me and that guy had a 3-year partnership.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in that 3 years, out of what he paid me, he cleared about $35,000. So he's a pretty smart business.
So he did all right.
Yeah, he did all right.
And you did all right.
I did all right. You know, if it wasn't for his belief in me.
Wow, that's quite a story.
Yeah, I mean, it was.
You ever heard one? You ever heard that kind of deal?
Not like someone willing to invest.
Like an investor.
Yeah, that's
an angler.
Yeah. I'm sure it's happened before, but that's a risk.
Well, it's
but he believed in you.
It's a risk, and you know,
it's
impressive
that he believed in you to that degree.
You know, the biggest thing that I take away from that is. My moral, all this that happened. Everything in life happens for a reason. And everything in life's about priorities.
Mm-hmm.
And I was raised by a father that was instilled in me that you work hard, and when you have commitments, you honor those commitments. And marriage and family came first. So I quit the dream. I put it aside, but I guess the man upstairs said it wasn't over. And I tell these kids, and I tell people all the time, man, this is my dream, this is my dream. And I'm gonna jump out there and do this. I said, no. Just let me tell you how it is. If God intends for you to do this, I don't care what happens, you will. I said, I'm living proof of that. I said, maybe it was my test that if you do it my way, then you'll get to here. But if you don't, because there's nothing to say. In 95, I was probably ready. The Pierces were actually paying my invitational entry fees. Rick Pierce believed in me that much. He paid my entry fees in the invitationals. And But it just, I don't know if I'd been ready. I mean, you don't know. In life, you can't second guess because you don't know.
And really, when you're talking about, going full-time pro as a 21-year-old with no obligations versus going full-time pro with a wife and two teenagers, that's a whole different level of risk.
You know,
involved there.
The hardest conversation I had of the whole deal is throughout all this. I mean, when I used to, I will never forget driving to Sam Rayburn. I had my 5-year-old with me. And the only time I fished an invitational that I went and actually pre-fished. And this is how I eat up. You want to talk about eat up with it? I left Birmingham on Friday afternoon at 4 o'clock and was back in Birmingham at Sunday night at midnight.
Ooh,
and wow.
I had my 5-year-old with me just so I could go see this lake.
I've made that drive.
Yeah, so, yeah. It's 10 hours humping it.
Yeah.
You know, so I probably got to fish a total of 10 or 12 hours and had my 5-year-old with me. And I was willing to do whatever you had to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just hard. I mean, I left my family with a business that left them shorthanded. I left my wife with another child at home, and I was always home every night. And when I walked in there, she had done got accustomed to me fishing over 10 or 12 years. So, but I was still never gone more than a night. And I walk in there one day and sit her down at the table and said, I'm going to go fishing for a living. And it wasn't good for a couple of weeks. I ain't going to lie to you.
I remember reading that she cried a lot.
Well, she cried a little bit. And then
yeah.
I think she was kind of mad. And then she just, all the range of emotions, you know, all of a sudden here I am. It'd be about like, I'm leaving.
See ya.
Have fun. And I won't never forget it. She walked in after work one day and she said, look, you can do whatever you want to do, and I'll support you. But you're going to pay the bills. And she said, the day you can't pay the bills, you can come home and learn you want to biggie size that. I don't care how you do it, but you're going to pay the bills.
You want fries with that burger.
Yes, sir. And but that's kind of the Matt Heron story, you know, that. It's just, I've been blessed, man.
Finish that story about your dad.
Yeah.
That it took him a while to understand.
You know, my mom and dad, it was my mama and my daddy, but at first, man, it was tough.
After you left the business.
Yeah, it was tough. Yeah. I mean, I left them shorthanded on that side, and they were also there looking at my wife and kids and me supporting them and all my obligations. And it was a tough spot to separate family, son, business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as a parent looking at life, because I've got two boys, you know, and love them dearly. And I want everything in this life for them. But I never had to separate sons in business. And then daddy's sitting there and he's worked his whole life.
It's his legacy.
It's his legacy.
Yeah.
And I'm telling him I don't want it.
Mm-hmm.
And man, it was hard.
Mm.
It was hard, you know, and it's, look, my story could have ended up in a totally different direction than this. So, like I said, I've been really blessed, but it's, you know, we've made amends now, and if I'm at a classic or if I'm at a final weigh-in, I'm fortunate that mom and dad is still here, and that you bet they'll be sitting in there watching.
You know, without the support from people like that, and we hear it time and time again on the stage, even if guys aren't winning, they thank their sponsors, but then they also make sure to thank their families. I can't think of an angler that hasn't mentioned their support system.
I'm always kind of blown away and impressed with how many of them, when they talk about their mom or their dad, start to break up.
Yeah.
You know, and I get that completely. I'm the same way, but I'm just impressed with how many are that way.
I think it's hard to explain to somebody that doesn't know the business, know the sport, the level of commitment that it takes, the sacrifice that it takes, the financial obligation. I mean, I think for the most part, you know, there's a pretty big group of people out there that on the outside looking in think, well, you get a fish for a living, pay an entry fee, you get a big, you know, nice check out of winning, and you go home during the week. That's a great life. But there's a lot more to it. And I think that we had Justin in here not too long ago, talked about his wife, her sacrifice, and how they've kind of come together on that. And I think we all have a story that kind of resembles that. But you, I mean, you went through every aspect of family support, not just your wife, your dad, and brought him around, and the whole sacrifice on the family business side of things. My dad owns a small business,
right.
And I kind of feel like I had a similar conversation once that I, you know, to this day, I often wonder if I would have been better off making those decisions. But you know what? He never doubted when. And he should have. There have been times he should have called me and said, you need to go get a real job. But knowing that I had his belief in my objective, my dad, even as a married man with kids, it still propelled me. And you maybe didn't have that right off the get-go, but was there a turning point for him? Was there a tournament you came home from? And he's like, I get it. Like, I know this is for you.
Well, you know, my dad was always, you know, he's a guy that believed in hard work.
Yeah.
You know, you work. And that's the way I was raised. You know, you work. So to see the tournament side of it, and trust me, I think deep down that he wanted, he always had. Out of all the people I've ever been in the boat with to this day, and not just because he's my daddy, but he taught me the basic fundamentals of bass behavior better than anybody. I mean, it's unreal.
Yeah.
The days that I spent in the back of an aluminum boat with daddy, and he was one of them that, you know, I was real astute and I paid attention to what we were doing, but he would still go through the whens and wheres and whys. And just those things. But yeah, he's a guy who worked his whole life, you know, and he wanted, a lot of people, you got to have something you can feel and touch, and you can see the outcome at the end. And look, it's scary. To jump in there, to jump into this deal right here, because for every Matt Herring that there is and my success at it, you want me to start naming off nightmares?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, there's a bunch.
The guys that didn't make it, the guys that lost everything they had.
Right.
It's countless.
Countless.
Yeah. Matt, what year did you start on the Elite Series?
I think it was 2009. I qualified in 2008 through the Opens.
Okay.
And then I started in 2009.
I was looking back at your numbers. For your Bassmaster career, you've had 109 Bassmaster tournaments. In the money, somewhere between 65-70%. So a pretty darn strong success ratio. I look back at the AOI finishes just for the past 7 years, and you've had some strong ones in there. You went from 2011, you were at 66. 2012, you were at 6. Finished 6th in AOI in 2012. 2013, you dropped back down to 77, but then back up in 2014 to 16th. Then in 2016 or 2015, you were 11th. 2016, you were 21st. So you had really three very strong years in a row, just very strong, top of the sport. And then this year, you're 56. You're barely out of getting into AOI. If I remember right, you were tied with Fletcher Shryock in points, but there must have been something in there with the tiebreaker that he got ahead of you just a little bit. So you've had some real highs, and then some years not as good, but never a guy who's going to fall and hit a 90th, you know, or a 100th or something like that. You've been respectable all along with some real high moments in there. How would you describe that career path the last 7 or 8 years?
Well, you know, I'll be 55 next year, and I come into the sport at 38 or whatever it is. I think next year will be my 16th season as a full-time pro. And there's a learning curve there. And unfortunately, yeah. I'm the guy that pushes the envelope as far as trying to win, and sometimes I get my own way for it. And I can't stand to show up at a lake that I don't feel like I can be competitive on. Some guys, you know, they say, well, I'm going to have 8 flipping tournaments there, and 4 flipping tournaments next year. And I'm going to make K&M, and then I'm going to do whatever I can in the rest. I ain't that way. I feel like that you ought to be able to do whatever you ought to do. And my desire trying to win gets me in trouble sometimes. and this year, just, you know, every year that I've had a subpar finish, and I ain't never not requalified.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
That's right.
The deal is every year like that, there's been a couple tournaments in there where I've kind of trapped myself. This year I done it. I won the Texas Toyota Bass Classic last year.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, congratulations. That thank was you. Nice payoff.
And it was, you know, I've kind of discovered, you know, I can grab the bank and fish how Matt fishes, and I can make a classic every year. But you ain't going to win. I mean, it's just, it's very hard. It seems like a great pattern nowadays is beat by a hole.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
You know, and I can go back and name you. You can, like, start naming top tens where I've had second, third, whatever, where a hole beats pattern. If a guy sits there and makes the same cast, you can't grab the bank.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to beat you. And this year we had three tournaments where a tournament could either be won. Or you could. There wasn't no doubt where the tournament was going to get won. Mm-hmm. It was going to get won offshore.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I've invested enough time over the last 7 or 8 years, I feel like I can be competitive offshore. And I've had multiple top 10 finishes in the Elite Series cranking or whatever, and mm-hmm. guys are like, no. I'm like, well, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of got caught in no man's land at Toledo Bend. I knew that tournament would get won offshore, and it did. John Murray won it.
Yeah.
But trying to push to win, Sam Rayburn, Brandon Pollitt wins it offshore. But there's way more guys finishing the top 20 fishing the bank
mm-hmm.
than there yeah. was offshore.
Yeah.
Well, 2016 or 17 is going to be a lesson to me that I tried to do both, and I wound up spending a day and a half looking out and a day and a half up.
Okay.
And you wound up in no man's land.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and then lost fish. Every tournament, a subpar finish. I had three poor finishes this year.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm looking at your finishes. You had three fantastic finishes.
I had three very high finishes, three average finishes, and finished, I had three subpar finishes.
He finished ninth at Cherokee, started the year super strong.
Which is was an offshore bite, right, for you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the interesting thing, too, you talk about 2016, last tournament of 2016 for you, which was Mille Lacs.
Mm-hmm.
Matt finished eighth at mm-hmm. Mille Lacs. I remember you and Brandon Palahniuk wailing on him,
yeah,
right?
Side
by side. Mm-hmm. And there. Then you come in and go ninth at Cherokee. You were eighth at Ross Barnett
mm-hmm.
and 13th at Champlain. Those were your best finishes of the year. It looked like to me you had three that killed you this
Just
year.
Killed me.
Just killed you this killed year. Me. Okeechobee was 94th, Toledo Bend was 95. And St. Clair was 95. Other than that, you were very respectable, made several checks.
Well, you're consistent. I mean, in the 90s anyways.
I ain't never had no 90s. You know, in Okeechobee, Bill Lowen and I are like brothers. I mean, there's never been another competitor ever that I would trust with everything.
Mm-hmm.
And he and I, for the last, I think, 4 years, three or four seasons, I can pretty much tell you everything he's doing, where he's doing, he can do the same. Well, Okeechobee, I just felt like that thing was right in my wheelhouse.
It should have been.
Right.
At Okeechobee.
Right. And I'm running around looking for the mother load, and I never could get content. Well, that particular tournament, Lowen finishes 13th.
Mm.
And it was in an area. I told him, I said, look, man, there's fish here. You're more than welcome to come on down there and fish. I said, that, you know, I may be in there, may not, whatever. Well, Lowen, he'd struggled in practice. So he jumps all over. You know, he comes down there. He puts it together. And I'm running around hunting the mother load and wind up finishing whatever, 90-something. When all I had to do was, I thought, it's just fish right there.
Yeah.
And then Sam Rayburn, same deal. I had one of the most phenomenal practices, shallow, that I've probably ever had. And big southeast wind muddied up what I was doing, and then I commenced to lose them like there's no tomorrow on frog. Still don't know why.
Hmm.
Same thing Toledo Bend. I lost six or seven fish over 5 pounds. Mm. All I, if I just boat 2/3 of the fish, even at Okeechobee, I lost 3 or 4 giants. And it, the big thing was, is fishing too fast and not being content. Because I absolutely despise being in a boat knowing that I cannot win. That just ain't me. I mean, that's, you talking about me being fierce and whatever? That's me.
Mm-hmm.
And
How long did it take you to come to that point? That seems to me like a very valuable lesson that you're only going to really get when you're experienced, you're seasoned, and you've been in the sport for a long time. The content thing, I don't think I've heard anyone ever talk about that when it comes to bass fishing, because it seems like for the most part, unless you win, nobody's content. But explain what you mean a little bit more about that feeling of being content and how that affects your day-to-day and on the tournament waters.
You know, some of the best tournaments you'll ever have is when you've had horrible practices. And it's what I'm leading up to here is all of a sudden the last hour of practice or the first morning of the tournament, you'll get a bite or two. And it's like the pieces of the puzzle starts coming together. Well, you're content to run with it because it finally started happening.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Or when you've exhausted all possibilities during pre-fish or during practice leading into an event, and you know this is really all you got, and you're content to go there and just expand on it. And do
you go all in on that.
Right, you go all in.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when you're fishing these tournaments where they're catching 30-pound bags and you don't think you can catch but 13 or 14, that may be good enough to get paid. And a lot of guys do that. Not dummy me. No. No, I'm just convinced that I can go catch 30 pounds. I'm going to figure it out. And after this year, maybe it kind of, this year stuck in my craw a little bit.
Matt, there's something that happened this year that you might not be willing to admit had a big factor for you. But I remember the story about your fishing notes, your fishing notebook, that got lost, got accidentally thrown out early in the year.
Yeah, it just.
And that might have messed you, that it had your notes in it from a bunch of lakes we went back to, and you didn't have those notes anymore. Was that a factor in a place like Toledo Bend where you've been a lot?
No, not really.
Okay.
That was more sentimental.
Okay.
That, and it was nice to kind of go back through there. The key stuff, it's still here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, surface temps, little bitty subtle deals, I lost that. You know, where we're here the first week of April or second week of April, where we're here was a water high, low. Some of those things like that, I lost. And it was just, I'm always just a little jotter. You know, my great-granddaddy, I've got his journals at home.
Mm-hmm.
He was a note taker. And I've got journals that go from 19, probably 88 to 2000 of all my stuff that I fished around here.
You still have those?
Still got them.
Yeah.
Still got them. And it, but no, I mean, that was just more disgusting.
Okay.
Than it was actual.
I remember a conversation we had about that. I think Don Barone had written a good story that was, it was really meant to encourage you.
Oh, yeah, it was.
And, you know, his intentions were good, but there was something in there about how that was, like, your entire network of where to fish, how to fish, when to fish. And, you know, that's a good question because, to hear you actually respond to that the way you did, you know, it says a lot about the value of that kind of thing. And I'm going to turn this on you here. I've been going somewhere with my questions. So that's something that you've grown up doing, something you've relied on throughout your career. You early on, you know, you were patient, waited for the right time to join the Elite Series or join get into the pro fishing world, right, and then the Elite Series. You learned the business side of it, the family support side of it. It sounds like you really consciously made decisions to make the right steps, make the right decisions, have the right people behind you along the way. And this is certainly, and don't get me wrong, anybody listening, you guys in the room here, this is not to take anything away from the new generation of fishermen coming in, because they're tough. They're very tough, and maybe that has a lot to do with the technology that's just ingrained in the modern current generation of society that makes them so good at reading electronics and applying what they're learning from all the information that you and your generation of anglers pioneered back in the day. But tell me a little bit about, or talk a little bit about, the differences between when you started as an angler to the amazing sticks in the Jordan Lee, Dustin Cannell, these guys that have... Justin Lucas, who was just here, they're very good anglers. They were able to put all that together with the information that was readily available. I want to hear from you about those early days before that information was here and how that separates Tommy Biffle, Matt Herron, some of the older generation guys from the new guys coming in, and then follow that up with some advice. What would you give to a new angler? But start with the differences.
Well, the differences was the amount of information that was available. You know, I remember when the snippets come out and started making the rounds on the East Coast about D. Thomas in a flipping stick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's a flipping stick?
Yeah.
What is this?
Think about those days when that was
right.
A new term.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, it just, this stuff wasn't available. I mean, you had a local magazines, maybe Fish and Game or something, that might put out a little information. But most of those guys were local sticks they were talking to, and they wasn't going to tell you nothing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could try to read it between the lines. And then, you know, you had however many issues of Bassmaster magazine you might get a little out of, and Field and Stream, God love them. I mean, they had some great stuff, but it wasn't very informational, you know, informative. It was a broad overview of a topic. And what little bits you could... You know, it was even hard to record them back then, man. VCRs were just coming on, you know. And we had, Bob Cobb, and the way he narrated it, I mean, man, he told a story. And it's light years difference. And the my generation, well, I learned through seek time, man.
Yeah.
I mean, if I wanted to know something, I had to go crawl in the boat.
And you had to look through the notes that you'd taken and refer back
right.
to your information gathering.
You know, I had to learn how to triangulate on the corner of the house and a telephone pole and a sliding board.
Mm-hmm.
How to fish offshore. And, you know, I'm fishing with mono and lead sinkers, and, you know, it was hard to fish a worm 12 foot deep, man.
Yeah.
And then Jack Chancellor comes along, and he's throwing a do-nothing worm, and, I mean, God. And then Paul Elias, I mean, I remember like I was yesterday, Paul Ice down there, heck, he had me hanging over the side of the boat whining, sticking a rod down in the water, trying to learn how to do that stuff. And it just, you know, that kneeling and reeling, and it just, and now these kids come along, and they're so good with computers.
Mm-hmm.
And they're so good at being able to go in there and do a search on whatever data that they want to find. And they can research cranking, or research drop shotting, or research fall fishing or spring fishing, and the information's there. Mm-hmm. The information highway's there, and these kids are like a sponge. They soak it all in. And then, you know, I didn't realize it till after years and years of fishing. I never used to think that there were scars in this sport, but they're scars, because bad tournaments or bad experiences are scars, and it's just like a fighter. You get hit with a left hook, and you'll always guard against that left hook.
Mm-hmm.
And these kids, they come out here, and they don't have them scars.
Yeah, I see that totally.
And those emotional scars.
It's kind of a fresh.
Yeah.
Roll in with what they see.
Right. They'll roll in, and they say, well, this tournament's going to fish A, B, and C, and they've all got it all broke down, and they go do what they're going to do. And man, look at what they're doing. It's amazing.
Man, I was amazed this year with some of the young guys how well they did up north.
Mm-hmm.
You know, guys from Alabama and Mississippi. Brock Mosley.
Mm-hmm.
And really, talking or hearing some of them on stage, they just kind of, I mean, a couple of them did do their work and went up there
right.
and practiced, but some others went up there and said, I just tried some things that I'd tried at home, and they worked out for me.
Well, I think Brock Mosley did the seat time thing. He came
he
up
did.
And he fished those lakes very seriously during the practice period.
Yeah,
and,
he did.
You know, that's to your point. The value of that really showed out for him.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And look, here's the thing. You saw or competed in this world before the electronics became so prominent. And I'm going to give you a compliment. I don't want you to let your head get all big here. But you have maintained a competitive edge with your electronics.
Yeah.
And your boat's rigged. It's decked out. And just because there was a day when you had to triangulate something, you've adapted. You've grown with the sport. You've embraced the modern electronics. I think that's a huge step up for anybody that started the hard way.
Right.
And is now, you know, working with some modern technology. Talk about how you've maintained your grip on that.
Well, look, when this is how you pay your bills, okay, and you either grow with it and accept it and get better at it, or you get out.
You said that earlier where you feel like you've had to keep learning constantly.
Sure. I'm not. Yeah. I'm at a point, you know, like I said, 2018 is going to be my 16th year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my age shows different, but it's going to be my 16th year as a full-time pro. So I haven't been able to, I'm not afforded that complacency.
Mm-hmm.
I can't get complacent.
Does that, you think that's built from the scars you were talking about, the tough lessons you learned when you were younger?
Sure, and that having to make sure that you get paid, and that, you know, having to make sure, you know, there's you don't have that economic comfort zone there. Mm-hmm. Where you're established in the sport. I'm established, and I've got great sponsors, but I also know that I still have to compete at the highest levels.
Mm-hmm.
And it wouldn't matter one way or another. That's just me. That's my MO. I can't stand to get beat. I can't stand to lose at nothing.
That hasn't decreased over the years,
no,
has it?
No, it hasn't competed. You know, I'm going to make a point about probably one of the greatest anglers that he is the greatest that's ever been, Miss Klein. If the scheduling were different, Rick Klein would still be a dominant, way more dominant than he is.
What do you mean by scheduling?
Yeah, how would you
Because
change?
We don't fish in his strengths anymore. Bassmaster used to start in August.
Mm-hmm.
September, August. Season started there. And you fished throughout the fall, and it was grinds.
Yeah, the fishing is tough.
Fishing's everywhere. Tough. Okay? And Rick excels at that.
Yeah.
Rick Klein to this day still excels at that type of fishing. And you took his primary wheelhouse. Now, if you'll ever notice, we show up somewhere, it's muddy and it's the conditions is right, he'll still bust your chops.
Mm-hmm.
With a spinnerbait or a crankbait doing what Rick does. But the sport's kind of evolved from that, and it's scheduling. Now, we're kind of a springtime, summertime, go up north, and, you know, we're kind of complacent in the scheduling. I would love to see a shakeup in it.
Mm.
I would love to see us go back to August. And because then you're going to open up the Pandora's box. You're going to start seeing guys.
Challenge guys.
Yeah, you're going to start seeing guys that can't go sit out offshore with a drop shot and catch them. Okay? And you can't go. You're going to see guys that don't excel. It's, you know, we got, I don't know how you'd break it down as far as numbers goes, but we got 10 to 20 guys in each category, each type technique, that when you show up at a sight fishing tournament, you can pencil out and Jones down in the top five.
Yeah.
I mean, the dude's unreal. If we, you know, if you show up and it's going to be a drop shot offshore deal, you can go ahead and pencil down Ayler or Brett Hyatt or Justin Lucas. I mean, that you're showing up in their wheels.
Mm-hmm.
Or you show up at a bush tournament, you can go ahead. Tommy Biffle's still going to crush your skull.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's just the way it is. But it, I would like to see the August deal come back with the old grind tournaments, and just because, I mean, I know that they're like Klun. People would still be scratching their head going, oh, Lord, looky here.
Well, you know what? It seems like a lot of those really tough tournaments, you can, and who knows the right percentage, but probably 50 to 60% of those anglers are out of it before it even starts.
Oh, yeah.
But I say that, and you know, every one of them would challenge me, or if anyone was put in that category, they, well, you know, that's not necessarily true. But the reality is when you come to a tournament, and you've experienced this, when you're at practice – or when you're getting into those official practice days, there's probably many times where you're like, I can't win on what I've got, so I got to do the best I can with what I've got. So you're not...
Well, not me. That's why I finished 95th.
Well, but you know what I'm saying. The point of the matter is there is a mindset that some of the younger generation or more inexperienced anglers, and that's not necessarily the Elite Series, but just all the way down the board into the weekend crew, that you can mentally take yourself out of an event because of tough conditions, where Rick, probably to your point,
does not,
because no. He knows what that means to compete and excel in that type of situation. So the electronics, the modern technology, it's been a big help to every angler out there. I think it's hard to argue that. How has it helped you in recent years?
You know, one of the best decisions or the luckiest moments in my life, I was fishing FLW when Johnson Outdoors bought Hummingbird.
Mm-hmm.
And Tim Price and I had already kind of got to be buddies. And when that thing went down, and Price was like, you know, you ought to run these Hummingbird units. And I said, I will, Tim. You know, and then long, you know, I start running it. I think I might be a 787 or something. I forgot what the first model was, you know. And little did I know where it was going. And
that wasn't too long ago.
That wasn't too long ago. That was 2005, 2005, whatever it was.
Yeah.
And I'm still there. And, man, just by my association with Johnson Outdoors and Hummingbird, little did I know that was probably the smartest move I've ever made in my career.
And are you, you're also running Minn Kota, you're running Talon.
Oh, yeah, I'm so running Talon.
You're
running
end to end, you're Johnson Outdoors.
Man, you're talking about living a charmed life. I mean, I was in a pro staff meeting in Mankato, Minnesota.
Heaven.
when I believe the question was asked in the pro staff meeting with all of us sitting there, what would we have to do to get the Tarova or Ulterra technology into the bass world? And then the next question, if I remember right, don't quote me on this, was if we done this, could we sell a trolling motor that's going to cost double where we're at now? And I think that the unanimous voice in the room was, you know, it had to be on a scissor lift like we're using now, and ain't no problem. You know, if these guys are paying $50,000 for a bass boat, if we can get this technology in there, and look at last year with Ultrex.
Yeah.
I mean, it's...
They can't make them fast enough.
You should have heard the grumbling at Mille Lacs 2 years ago when Polnick and I were sitting out there in waves rolling up to our knees.
One of the best photo galleries ever, I think.
I was there, and you kept lifting your feet up so they wouldn't get wet. Yeah.
Well, you know... There were several competitors that were trying to get in that area. They physically couldn't do it.
Yeah.
I mean, they could not fish.
Yeah.
I was cutting up with Boyd. Boyd Duckett, he was kind of behind me a couple hundred yards over there fishing a spot. And we were at the tanks, and I was like, Boyd, were you fishing a couple areas or what? He's like, huh? I said, well, I'd look over there, and you'd be fishing. The next minute, you was gone. Every time Boyd would catch one, he'd be half a mile away over there and have to crank up, run back.
We had some wind last year. This year was a lot flatter, but I remember that. We had a couple, I think 2 days in a row, it was 4-footers. But
I got a question for you in terms of preparing for next year. So, I mean, typically every elite angler we talk to kind of has almost a self-improvement plan for the next year. Some of it's personal, and then some of it is fishing style. And you've already... before you came on the air, you talked to us a little bit about losing weight, and you've lost...
You are a shadow of your former self.
You've lost 30 pounds?
Yeah, about 35 pounds.
And congratulations. So talk a little bit about what your game plan is for next year. Clearly, losing weight was a piece of it.
Well, that was kind of health-driven, too. My blood sugar kind of got up, and it was a fact that if I didn't lose weight, I was going to wind up having to be treated for diabetes, and I didn't want to do that. So...
Nobody likes needles.
No, I don't like needles at all. And it's just a matter of, you know, to compete at the highest levels, you have to take care of your body. And I'd gotten a little heavy, need to take care of that. You know, I've been exercising. I've been doing everything I can to get my mind and my body back to where it needs to be. But as far as next year, you know, coming off of this year, I mean, I've had some rock solid finishes. You know, and anytime you can make Sunday cuts for this bunch, you're doing well. Mm. I just felt like that the only thing I really need to do going into 2018 is find a little more contentment as far as accepting that they ain't going to win them all. And I believe that's – and, I don't know, man. I show up every year. I'm just going to go fishing. I mean, have I looked at the schedule? Yes. Have I looked at where I maybe need to spend a little time to prepare for next year? Yes. But for the most part, I think it's all about getting right between the ears. Huh. I mean, that's I'm looking at 2018 as far as mental for me.
And that doesn't mean that you fish conservatively or back down your intensity. You just think differently about a tournament. Does that mean you don't go for the win every time? Does that mean you fish for points and a check? What does that mean exactly? Get content with your...
Well, you know, I got caught in 2017 trying to fish out and up. And I just got to where I'm confident enough in my ability that I can do either or. And I feel like I can drop out and fish offshore. Mm-hmm. I can fish whatever. And it kind of backfired on me. I figured out that in a 3-day practice, you really need to commit. And what's going to be the dominant deal. I mean, it's Sam Rayburn, no doubt. It's going to get one offshore. Toledo Bend's going to get one offshore. I knew that. It did. I was dead spot on predictions where, you know, how it was going to go down. But I thought that there would be a higher percentage of guys that did well fishing offshore. Mm-hmm. And we were kind of late into the year at both venues as far as the dominant, you know, still being a majority of the fish up shallow. Mm-hmm. It kind of backfired on me. I wanted to try to win both events, and I looked out there, and I kind of got caught. It was like a 1% of the field was going to have success there, and the rest of it was going to go down doing what I love to do, which is grub the bank, because that is my wheelhouse. Mm-hmm. And I kind of got caught playing in somebody else's ball game.
Matt, when you make one of those decisions and it doesn't work out, which is going to happen to anybody, does it the next day or that night afterwards, do you get spun out a little bit, mad at yourself or second guessing or anything like that?
I wouldn't call it getting spun out or getting mad. I call it you make notes and learn.
Yeah.
You just put it down in a notebook and you try to grow from it. You try to learn from it. You know, and look, when you're pushing the envelope and you're trying to win, you're trying to compete at the highest levels, you're going to make mistakes. Mm.
And they're going to hurt.
They're going to hurt. And, I mean, if you're a competitor, they're going to hurt. They're going to stick in your craw.
It's a little bit like a quarterback in football where you throw an interception. You got to then kind of erase that from your mind and move on.
Yeah, comes back down to what we was talking about earlier about them scars.
Mm-hmm.
Them scars, you know, you can either protect against them or you can learn from them.
So how scared does the rest of the Elite Series need to be of Matt Herron next year? Are we going to see a rebirth?
Oh, I don't know about that. I didn't know I'd ever died, you know. But, and,
not yet, anyways.
No, Matt Herron's just going to do what Matt does. I'm going to crawl in the boat. I'm going to compete at this bet, you know, to the highest ability that I have. And when the dust all settles in 2018, we'll see what happens.
Hey, maybe this year you won't start it out by limping around. I remember you had a pretty good ankle injury to start the year last year.
That's right.
At least the first two events, you were limping around.
Yeah, I had.
Maybe at the Classic.
Yeah, I had it.
Stepped into a boat badly and hurt your ankle.
Yeah, I forgot about that. I don't even want to think about that. Yeah, it was.
Hey, you could have blamed some of this on that. No,
there are no excuses. Okay. Yeah. If you can physically get in the boat and you can make a cast and you can do your job, then it is what it is. And just, you know, what's the old saying? Just call it like you see it, boys.
Yeah. That's,
it, you can't – I'm going to go on record saying this right here. The level of the competition in the Elite Series is getting better drastically every year.
Mm-hmm.
And in the coming years, you're going to see guys like Matt Heron that's always been at the top, have years that you sit back and scratch your head and go, how'd that happen? A lot of them guys is fixing to taste that same year because, boys, that field right now is stacked. And it's getting more competitive every year. And it's going to you're not going to be able to have a bad week. If you have a bad week, it will undo your year.
Mm-hmm. Well, the last 2 years of the Angler of the Year Championship have really come down to the wire, and they can place it back on a bad tournament, a bad day, a fish.
A
you know,
fish.
There have been times, and that seems to be – that's probably the greatest stories that we've yet to tell are
right.
that decision that year that really impacted the outcome. And, you know, we can talk
got,
an awful lot.
One, about one last question, but go ahead.
Well, we're not wrapping this up yet. I want that. But I don't think you can tie everything to one decision. But give me that one thing last year you wish you would have done different. The one instance in 2017 you wish you would have done a little differently.
Just committed shallow and fished to my strengths.
Yeah.
I mean, just commit. And just that contentment I was talking
about. Okay.
And then, like I said, I can go back. And what it caused me to do by not being content is when you're actually going through the process trying to catch fish during a tournament and your mind's going – You can't win to do it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But yet you know you got to survive the day,
mm-hmm.
and you just never will allow the day to unfold. And what it caused me last year is like I would get fishing too fast, and I had three tournaments where execution was awful
mm-hmm.
because I was somewhere else when I was here, and I was trying to get finished.
Your
with
mind
this.
Was somewhere else.
Yeah, and it just. I never was at peace, you know, that this is what I'm doing, this is how I'm going to do it. And you're always in a hurry. And it wasn't that I didn't get the bites. I still had the bites. I still had the bites to finish in the top 20 in the points,
mm-hmm.
probably maybe top 10. Because I'm telling you, I could if I had a GoPro video in there, you'd be going, oh, my God. I mean, it was ridiculous.
I'll do better at that next year.
I don't know, man. Every time you get in my boat, it's like bad voodoo or something.
Really?
Okay. That's fair.
All right, so we can point out which ones he got in.
No, man. Thomas is all good. It just, but no, I mean, at Toledo Bend last year, I don't remember what I did on day one, but I didn't fish the way I needed to fish. But I knew where an area was I could catch back up, you know, or make top 50. First three bites in the morning were 5-pounders, and I lose all three up inside the boat.
Mm.
And it ain't. And most time, I just kind of shrug, and, you know, just compartmentalize it and go forward. That day, oh, no. Oh, I had an Ike moment. And I don't ever have Ike moments,
You
man.
Melted down.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was like, my God, what do I got to do?
Maybe wrapping it up, the last question I got for you, who's going to win the national championship in football this year?
Man, my heart and soul wants Alabama to win it.
That's not a real long shot, you know.
No, it's not a real long shot, but my gosh, we got some hurdles to overcome.
Yeah.
I mean, we've lost either five or six starting linebackers, and as deep as Alabama is, boys, there's just something about playing time and, you know, them guys seeing the field and then, you know, that experience. And it's going to force some guys to step up. There's a lot of talent down there, but it's going to force some guys to step up and do some things special. And we got to play. Mississippi State will be a challenge. I think they'll overcome that one. But then you're looking at an Auburn team that can physically whip Alabama at the line of scrimmage.
Mm.
And without great linebacker play, it's questionable. And then Georgia's going to do the same thing.
Georgia's good, and we really need probably Brian Brasher in here to give us the full rundown.
You know, if we had two Alabama fans in here, I think this studio might melt down.
Well, that we would be probably missing our deadline to do Facebook Live here in about 12 minutes. But to wrap it up, Matt, this is, first of all, I love your story. A lot of encouraging, inspiring things. You've been in the game for a while, and you're – like I said to begin, you're still young and vibrant, and there's a lot of Matt Heron left that's going to come out this year.
Still getting it done.
He's still getting it done. So you have some experience in the game, some skin in the game, some scars from the game. Give a little piece of advice to maybe the incoming crop of rookies in the Elite Series or anybody that maybe in high school, college, or might have the same dream that you did. What would you tell them to prepare for?
You know, the number one thing kids come to me when I'm doing seminars or working shows or whatever is they wanna learn about techniques, you know, tell me about how to do this or tell me about how to do that or what do you think is the most important thing. It's still real simple. If you're coming into this thing, learn as much about but fish behavior as you can. And I know it sounds boring, and it ain't real sexy, and it ain't, but if you understand why he's where he is and where he's going when he leaves, and if you can get in that process, then you'll always be around fish. And, and then the X's and the O's of whether you catch them on a jig or a spinnerbait becomes irrelevant.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's all about fish behavior. And get you a good marketing degree because this game's getting funny.
Well, you know, you mentioned that. A lot of these guys maybe didn't finish college, but some of them did. And that's going to make them tough because they do have that marketing or some of that education. Matt Lee, what, he's got engineering degree?
Engineering, and I think Jordan has marketing.
Well, you know what's scary, right? Steve Kennedy's got an engineering degree from Auburn.
Scary, yeah. Like that's a good education or a questionable one? He's not here, so you can throw it out there.
I love him to death. Have you ever been around him much?
He knows what he's talking about.
The dude can catch a fish, but he, it's just, I don't know, man.
That would be a great show. I might call him.
Yeah.
Get the story. Fun. Yeah.
He is a fish whacking machine, but yeah. He's just, I think there's so much going on in that head sometimes, he has a hard time.
Yeah.
Telling you about it.
But he proved he still got it last year.
He won at Dardanelle.
You know, funny story before we get off here. The very first tournament, but back in the day, it was Red Man. It was boat on boat draw.
Mm-hmm.
Steve Kennedy won the very first one he won out of the back of my boat.
Wow.
At Lake Martin in Alabama.
It's a good little bit of history.
He caught a 6 or 7 pounder or something, ooh, a great big one right out from behind me on a jig. Yep, so that's how far me and Steve go back.
And you'll be competing against each other come February on Lake Martin.
Lake Martin.
Yes, sir.
It's going to be a fun year. Jim, Matt, thank you so much for being here. This has been one of my favorites. I've got two, so, I mean, you're definitely one of those favorites.
You're in the top two so
top
far.
Top two so far.
Yeah, the third one will be here next. I'm working down and going back. Yeah,
maybe.
Hey, right now you're in the top 10, my friend. Thanks for being here. This is Inside Bassmaster. This has been Thomas Allen. We'll check you here next time. And good song choice, by the way.